So that it wasn't about meeting Jesus for the first time. He'd already had a connection with Jesus, and it really wouldn't matter what he looked like. There was some kind of internal essence that connected. And so my own research for my book, it's called Lead Like a Heretic, How to Challenge the Status Quo and Survive, which is important in terms of Jesus, is that I recognize there were some strains within this that are in the pictures in some ways, but they're the kind of strings between them. So that when I put them down, and I would encourage you to do that, but take them and look at them together and then mix and match and find out when things did happen, because they're sort of interrelated in that way. And the strings, the three strings that I found in all of them, one is the nature of servanthood. That a heretic is always a servant. A really authentic heretic is a servant. And there is that kind of connection in all four of those, that the only reason he was like he was for the other. It was not for himself. And I guess that's borne out by phenomenal leaders that I know and I've been privileged to coach, is that they all have that sense of the servant. That they're not so much in control as they are in the business of compassionate coaching to their staff. That's why they get such great productivity. And so they don't wear their heart on their sleeve. They wear it inside, and so that there is a connection. It's like a lot of religions where the bowing, for example, is to bow to the divinity that is in within the others. I've watched presidents and CEOs visit around in their plants in the world, and they don't do this. If they did, there'd be those who would say, but they do. They recognize the other and are not afraid to show that kind of compassion and connection. So the first thing, the first string that I discovered in the book, what I did was I did a profile of the heretic and then what the heretic does, because it's a business book and there has to be some kind of productivity there. Nah. My editor told me that. So. But the first string that kind of connects it is this idea of being a servant, and the second is to be a dreamer. Every heretic that I researched, that is not only ancient but contemporary, because there are lots of really wonderful contemporary heretics who challenge the status quo. They have this sense of dream. That they have not just a vision, which is a kind of crazy thing in some ways, I'm not being critical. Yes, I am being critical. I visited with this president of a Fortune 100 company, and I said, "Can you tell me about the vision of your company?" And he started looking on his desk. He had this blotter, and he's looking under the blotter, and he said, "We spent a whole weekend on that last year." And he's looking under the blotter for the vision of the company. The vision of the company, and that's part of the reason I was there, is that there was no sense of the vision. He said, "We have a vision statement." I said, "Well, that's a statement. That's words. Tell me what the vision is, what you have in your mind and your heart that sees where it could be." When we started to open those things up, he said, "Well, I'd get fired if I ever suggested something like that." I said, "Why don't you give it a try?" And so with fear and trepidation, I never saw him sweat. It was sweating when he went into the meeting. And I was there, and he almost said, it's some of his ideas. But it turned the company around. The company is IBM. I wasn't, in a sense, trying to be religious, but I was operating in the spirit of Jesus. And there is a sense in which I guess I feel like I'm undercover. I once put up on a slide a a portion of scripture from Isaiah, but I said, I don't know where I got this. I lied. But I put it up there, and they all read it as a kind of opener for the day, not a morning devotion, but this is what we're going to do. And they looked at it, and they said, boy, who's the writer? I'd like to read more of that. It's sort of being undercover. And why do I wear these socks? It's a pair, actually. It's because a woman in... A woman in my congregation who has just died about a year ago, Joyce Decker. I mentioned something about socks, and so you know, every time she went away, and she went away a lot, she brought me another pair of socks, and so this is one of those pairs of socks. But the interesting thing is that people will say to me, interesting socks, where did you get those? And I have a chance to tell the story about Joyce Decker and how she loved the Lord. And so it's a promo, without being a promo, because I mean, they serve a purpose. They're on my feet, and I think that's the nature of the dreamer, is to be able to say you could be more than you want to be. I mean, I mentioned my students who don't want to give me answers in class because they might be wrong, and some of them had really bad educational experiences where they were just, you know. And so I turned it around in the spirit of Jesus, of this revolutionary. I said, how many of you are here because you have to get a good mark? And they all put their hand up, all 14 of them put their hands up. I said, well, then let's do it this way. Why don't we try a new way of understanding why you're in this class? Not to get the material, but to grow in some way. And they thought, well, that's kind of general, but what do you mean, sir? I said, well, why don't I give each of you an A to begin with? And they're looking at each other. Who is this weirdo? And one of them put up his hand and said, I can't take that because I have to earn it. I said, you must be a Calvinist. And he said, yes, I am. I said, no, why don't we do this way, that I believe in you because the university has vetted you to be in this course, that you should be capable of getting an A. So you start with A, and if you work your butts off, you'll all get an A. And did they? And they have for 7 years now. They do that, start every class with an A. And I get called in every year by the dean and says, you don't understand the bell curve. And I say, well, you have a different kind of bell. If you didn't give me such great students, I wouldn't be able to give them such great marks. Well, I understand that now. So this heretic is the one that doesn't challenge on the basis of just being able to disrupt, because that's what heretics do. They disrupt creatively. So they're a servant, and then a dreamer, and out of that context, then they're able to challenge the status quo. There's nothing wrong with the status quo. I mean, what status quo really means is that it was really good yesterday. That's what it really means. And there's nothing wrong with it being great for yesterday, but for today and tomorrow, there may have to be some changes. And there are several in this room who have heretical bends, and you know that's the way it works, especially in politics. The nature of being a heretic is to provide a new status quo, a brand new one. We faced that in our little church. I retired, and then this little group of sinners approached me. They said, you're really good at growing things. We'd like you to grow our house church. So we have, and we've been busy with that. But now we have people who are so happy in Jesus that they don't want to do anything more than just being happy. And I'm not happy with that. And I have a vision, literally, for this congregation that some of them are saying, all I want from this congregation is to be buried here. Don't disturb the water. Don't ripple everything. And yet, I think that in some ways, we're all called to be heretics from our own sense of passion. And so this idea of being a servant, but also a dreamer and a challenger, then provides that foundation to be able to move forward. I'm going to stop there and see if that makes sense to you. Yes, and that's, sorry.
That's what it means in church history. But I have a sense you're using it more in a secular sense, in a general sense. That
yes.
I don't know if that's an answer.
I think that's true in the world, I agree, in a secular sense. But true heretic means they're going against the truth of Jesus Christ. That wouldn't be a good thing. Do you know what I mean?
But Jesus was not.
Shit. Now there's a word. No, you don't have to be pardoned with that. People understand what that means. That reminds me of that child's bib I once saw. Spit happens. and it does.
Well, and that's part of when we were looking at these portraits of Jesus, especially the one where he's suffering. We tend to sanitize things in the religious sphere, and it's, as far as I'm concerned, life and faith in general is kind of a messy business, and so being messy kind of lends itself to being a heretic, I guess, because heretics don't color in the lines, they color outside
yes.
the lines,
yeah.
and they color their apples purple and things like that. So there's nothing wrong with that, but I do believe, and I think what Susan's alluding to here, is that there is a core. We all have to have a core. to me, that's what my belief is. I'm a Jesus follower. Now, am I a certain denomination? Probably not. But as long as I'm a Jesus follower, I can do a lot of different things and still be authentic and true to what I believe. I think it's all about kind of based in the implementation of it all. You know, we tend to label people and categorize people in ways because of the way we implement our faith. And I don't really think God cares as long as we have our core.
Others.
Well, I just thought of an example a couple weeks ago in a church sermon. Talk on the wedding banquet, and the father and the guest who did not have a wedding garment, and he sort of, I think, he said, I'm kind of turning conventional interpretation of this story on its head, because he interpreted it kind of opposite of what historically been interpreted. And I felt like I was hearing that. Well, it was the first time. I was ready to go with this, guys. It was much more pleasing. And I liked how he did that. He took the chance to
Jeffrey
say,
Moore.
I'll see this differently.
Yeah,
you know?
That was a very different way of looking at that story.
I want to challenge a little bit when we talk about heretics and talking about the truth. Because if you look through, particularly church history, I mean, there were people who were true followers of Jesus who were burned at the stake because the status quo kind of lost the truth, or they felt they had such a corner on it that if you don't believe exactly the way we do, getting rid of you. So you think a lot of the heretics that were burned and all the rest of that, you know, they were trying to speak for truth. I don't think they were speaking against truth at all. They were speaking against the status quo.
Well, if you look at the, you know, the founders of all your major denominations, they were heretics. I think in many ways, and those of you in Catholic Church will be able to tell me, but what I hear of your Pope is that in a sense he's a heretic, but he's challenging, you know, some things. And because of that is making, you know, movement. Yeah.
Well, I guess it's what you're being a heretic against. If you're being a heretic against the truth of Christ, then it would be a negative.
Yes.
Against the truth of man-made doctrines, churches, whatever, then...
Which is what Jesus was a heretic against. You know, the rules, the law, not Pharisees. You know, yeah, the
I guess
the way
I
it was
think
interpreted.
Jesus is God, and God was king, judge, and lawgiver. So he was all of that. And I think that we are so... Hmm. He's so far above us.
Yeah.
I really like what Elaine said about the core.
Yes.
And then she said about some people paint their apple purple. But in order for it to be an apple, it has to kind of look like an apple. I mean, if it looks like an orange, even if it was purple, nobody's going to think it's an apple.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you get down to it and you dissect it and you find that the core, you know, my daughter knows one of my favorite things is, you know, John Wesley, if your heart beats with my heart in love and loyalty to Jesus Christ, give me your hand. And if your heart beats with my heart in love and loyalty to Jesus Christ, give me your hand. And I think up here at Epworth, when you have people of different denominations and everything, and out in the world, people that come from different places, realize to come back to that core. And then, you know, but that's the thing we stand on, not on a written vision statement, you know, there's something, but we stand on the truth of Jesus Christ. We stand on the truth of God. That is the core. And then from that, you know, that's what makes it an apple. And, you know, Jack may paint his rainbow color or turquoise or whatever, you know, and Melody's going to be peach or... You know, what it, but it's still, if we're standing on that, but that's where we meet. And then, you know, and in our own way, you know, depending upon what our situation is, where we are in life, you know, there are things that we need to challenge that don't stand upon that, and we need to say, no, I can't accept that. You know, that doesn't, I need to come back to the core.
I think that's what effort continually needs to come back to. You know, for those of us that are around this circle, to say, what is our core? What established effort? What are the values that make this place different? And stand on the core, not whether you're Roman Catholic, Episcopalian, you know, we go around in a circle, how, you know, that doesn't matter. You know, I don't really care when you finally decide it has to be so many Methodists, some people with an effort. I don't care. That's not what it's about. But it is about the core. I think that's true. And I think the struggle for those of us who, I think everyone's gotten so much stronger about this now. This place is different. And why is it different? And it's our core. That's
not good.
Well, and it's interesting, you know, talking about Edward, I had just had to fill out a form for a renter. And they have very specific questions that you answer about would this renter be a person of faith, in essence, and would this person be a renter who would go to church and abide by the rules that we have in observance of the Sabbath? And I thought to myself, you know, people must be filling these out and not really truthfully answering them or caring about their answer, because there are people that are renting and, you know, don't know the rules, don't obviously don't seem to care too much about them because they're doing the activities and they're, you know, really supposed to know that they're not, and so forth. And so I guess the core is being challenged. See, I would call them heretics, but that's just the way I look at it. Because because they aren't being truthful to the core of that word. So, but I'm challenged by this
new. Well, the sense of a Steve Jobs, for example, is that challenged almost every convention there was. And yet there was a sense in which he was asked his vision, and he famously said, "I want to put a dent in the universe." And he put a significant dent in the universe. I think what I have seen with heresy is that often there's a closed-mindedness about being a heretic, that it's my way or the highway. And I think that's the danger of heresy, to think that you have all the answers when you don't know the questions.
Well, actually, for those that know, have all the answers, I'm way more scared of them.
Oh, yes. Yes.
That automatically sends a red flag up to me to say, well, then you would be Jesus, right? And you're not, so I'm pretty sure you don't have all the answers. So I think that the thing I struggle with a little bit is when Jesus says he came to fulfill the law. Because oftentimes I look at the law as being reflected by the Pharisees, who were so silly about the details and following all these little man-made, they were just confection to me. And so there has to be, when he said, "I came to fulfill the law," there has to be something about what that law to him meant. And going back to this core thing, like loving your neighbor, loving God, that those were the two core things that Jesus said were important.
Right.
And that's what Deuteronomy, he meant by the law. Mm-hmm. You know, the law, love the Lord your
but
God.
But don't, it's not heart. Like, oh, you can't switch off a switch on a Sabbath, because that would be breaking the Sabbath. You know, there's all these Orthodox rules out there that...
Well, they're still alive today. I remember I first moved to Grand Rapids, and was a Sunday, and the lawn needed cutting. And so I went out to cut the lawn, and my neighbor came over and just stopped cutting the lawn. And he said, "Do you know what day it is?" And I said, yes, I do. And he said, "It's the Sabbath day, and you must keep it holy." I said, "But the mower is borrowed. It's not my mower." Oh. And that seemed to be all right. And I still to this day have never figured out why that was okay to have somebody else's mower on my grass. The grass didn't care at all about that. Let me say, I've said enough, then you won't buy the book, but the nature of this idea of being a servant and then a dreamer and a challenger issues into the kinds of things that we all are entitled to do, and that is that really marvelous heretics are those that create movements. And so it's not just one person standing up. A movement is a lot of people who are together going in the same direction at the same time. And they do it in a really specific way, as I've looked at the historical nature of this. They are really good at engaging people. They are really great at energizing people. And then they put those two together in terms of the engagement and the energizing, and then they empower them and they give their power away, which is so Jesus. I coach a gentleman who is Jewish, and I introduced this idea of servanthood and also of empowering. And he said, "You know, that's very Jewish." And I thought, "You're right, it is." And I think that's what the challenge is with heresy, and the truth is to say, you know, it's the truth as we perceive it, the truth as we see it, and that we are not given the authority to have only one truth in the world. And I know that's difficult for many, But I can tell you from my engagement with the United Nations, I wouldn't exist very long if I just thought that I have the one and only way. And there's always with that seriousness, there's a humorous side to it. So I did an interview, and the interviewer, a radio interview, and the interviewer said, asked me, you know, if you came across a terrorist, what would you do? And I said, well, I would probably say, let's have lunch. And I thought that was the end of it until the State Department called me. And they said, we heard a radio interview about engagement of terrorists, and we want to know about this lunch strategy. And I said, excuse me, I don't quite know what you mean. Well, you said in the interview, well, you just invite a terrorist to lunch. And I said, I would. That's because we know scientifically that very few people are killed over lunch. And the interesting thing is the State Department is still listening. And so we have to be so careful that we don't have all the truth and nothing but the truth, because it's very, very slippery. And in order to not only get along, but to thrive together, we really need to have that spirit of Jesus that's really, really open. Not to everything in the sense of taking every little piece of whatever it pleases us, but of being open to other people having their way of understanding the truth. I know that. Yes.
There's only one way to heaven, and that's through Jesus.
That's what I believe, yes.
If someone asks you that, would you say, yes, I'm going?
Yes, I would.
I think you're right that we can't say we have the truth, but I think we can point the person we're discussing with to the fact that Jesus did make this claim that he was the truth.
Yes.
And we only come to the Father but by me.
Yes. And that's
that's what he said.
I hear you. I hear you.
And when I meet people that I love dearly and that I engage in conversation with all the time, that they have this sort of, oh, well, it doesn't really matter what you believe. We're all going to go to heaven. First of all, they don't believe in the devil. They don't believe in hell. Many of these people, they're very wonderful people, and they're maybe living better lives than I am and doing more servanthood and heretical in some ways, as you're using that word, but they really don't know Jesus and they don't want to know Jesus.
But the reality is that when I'm in Africa feeding a child, the child doesn't care. And furthermore, when I have my Muslim friends beside me, I don't challenge them on what they believe. We're involved together, engaging to feed this child. Especially in Michigan with the Muslim population, we have to be very careful not to be seduced by everything is okay. But also to be able to say that there are different points of view. And in answer to Jay's question, I'm a passionate follower of Jesus. And so I take responsibility for my own sense, but of others who have different points of view, I don't think any less of them because they believe differently from me. But I take responsibility for myself because that's the only one I can take responsibility for. And I think that's what you were getting at.
Mm. To me, it's not about what we do anyway. It's always about what Jesus did for us. And regardless of whether we believe that or not, it's what he did for us. And I'm sticking with that.
Yeah.
It's my story and I'm sticking to it.
That's right.
Yeah, I believe it.
Jay, I think the concept of Jay and I talk quite a bit about these things, but the concept of being right, as you said, right in the sense that we know what the truth is. I know what the truth is. There's such a fine line between, on the one hand, with a Muslim, for example. And I was really impressed with that story about the guy who has been Muslim all his life and now is an evangelical Christian, and he knows the Quran from backward to forward, and that's why he makes such good Christian evangelism. I know what the truth is, therefore, in my own heart, I have to believe that what the Muslim thinks is the truth is incorrect. But I'm not helping him by saying that to him. The way that I help him is by somehow witnessing to him and showing him the truth of Jesus somehow through my own life. And Jesus, after all, accepted Muslims. Well, you know, he didn't know any, but, you know, he would. Were he in this room or in what's the name of that town, Southern Michigan, with all the Muslims?
Dearborn.
Okay, he would accept them because he accepted all sorts of people, every conceivable sort of people. So there's a fine line between knowing that Jesus is the truth, and therefore the Muslim hasn't found it yet, and accepting him as my brother anyway. It's hard to do, because if you start a discussion together, and he asks you what the truth is and what isn't the truth, I mean, you got to talk about it if you're honest, but a lot of the time, the discussion isn't even there, it's just the attitude.
And Jesus engaged in
suffering Jesus. And this morning before I came here, I went to Help Ministries to arrange with them to pick up some things, and I think I saw this man. I think I saw this man there, the suffering Jesus. It was a young black man, and he was actually helping to carry some things in that somebody else had brought, and they commented on how strong he was, and yet his face, obviously, I look at this, and that's what I see. Is I see that young man this morning who had come looking, he had come for help, you know, for himself, but yet he had offered stuff too. And you know, someone who is, you know, to come asking for help for people in our community, in our society, you know, they're humble. And so, that's when I looked at this picture. I thought, I just saw this man this morning, and I think as we look through all four of these.
Yeah.
To realize that, you know, whether it's the laughing, the, you know, the joy of life, as you talked about last night, too, you know, the joy, the suffering, the, you know, revolutionary, and, you know, when you look at those, we can see those in each other, and we can, if we look at the people around us, we can see that, and let, you know, we look for, and I think that's kind of what Bruce is saying with, you know, they may not know Christ, but that Christ is there, reflected in them too, you know, in their image. And we need to make sure that at all times we reflect the image of Christ.
And put conditions on love. I think God is unconditional love.
Yep.
That's a hard one for us to do.
Well, you should bring out Mother Teresa. There wasn't any time to be talking about Jesus. She was just ministering.
She was being Jesus. She wasn't talking Jesus. She was being him.
As though they were Jesus.
Yeah.
As they
And often it's in my experience anyway. It's it's our experience that teaches us if we're open to those moments. So I'm with some faculty, and we're going to another place for a seminar. And so we have a 9-passenger van, and we have 11 people. And I ended up in the back of the van, and I'm right next to this guy I've never met before. And we're literally one together like this. And so the person next to me says, I guess we're joined at the hip. And then he looked at me and he said, Dr. Phil, I am your brother. Devout Muslim. And so he asked me after we had that kind of connection, and we were having lunch together, and he said, do you see any Jesus in me? I said, Aslam, from the backside, yes, I see that. And he started to smile, and we roared because the shish kebab that we had ordered was not well done. And that's where I think that the spirit of Jesus is more important than the isolated things that we have. And we all have a composite connection with Jesus in that way. It needs to be pretty wide. To know the Jesus that I know, and then to be able to serve that one in the world is our privilege. Yes, yes, yeah. And so,
interesting to remember too that communicating our ideas, 80% of communication is nonverbal. 80%.
Yes.
So by looking, by doing, by hearing, by doing all those things, you're gonna get it sooner or later.
Yeah.
Talking gets in the way sometimes.
Yeah.
Oh, I was just gonna say, I wonder how the electronic media is gonna change.
Oh.
Yeah, the friend. Such a new definition now.
Do you want to?
No, seriously.
Yeah, let's be silent and quiet as we are together, and then let me pray to close. Gracious God, we have come in your love. And now we go back to our work and to our play with that same love that you've instilled in us. So we anticipate the future because you and our own persons are one. We pray in the precious name of Jesus. Amen. Thank you for the opportunity.